Today we hear a lot about revival. People are saying we need revival in our churches, in our nation. Well, how do we get it? What are the roots of revival and how does it get started? Well, I became the leader of a revival that touched the nations. I'm going to tell you how I got there on the next More Faith, More Life podcast.
You were made for more than the status quo. I'm Pastor Steve Gray, and this is the More Faith, More Life podcast. This podcast is for Christians with an ambitious heart who want to be more for their family, do more with their career, and see more of God's promises in their life. I've spent many years as a worship artist, minister, nonprofit leader, bold truth speaker, and most importantly, father and spouse. When I was in my early 40s, I was craving more from God and more from life. I'd done everything I was supposed to do. My life was good, but it wasn't good enough. So I spent the following years diving into the Word of God and searching for the biblical principles that would bring me closer to God and help my purpose and life flourish. That's what I want to share with you. In every episode, you'll get practical tools based on real life experiences that you can put into action to redefine your faith and ultimately your life. So, if you're ready to do more, subscribe to More Faith, More Life, and hear an unfiltered biblical truth every week. It's time to be and experience more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another More Faith, More Life podcast. I'm Steve Gray here with my wife, Kathy. We're so glad that we have this opportunity to share with you biblical principles, how people can have more faith, how people can get more life by having more faith. And then we're breaking down now something, a project that Kathy started, and it's called Legacy. And today you hear a lot about legacy. I hear it on TV. You start your legacy, leave a legacy. I think 10 years ago you never heard it, but now it's a popular phrase. And somehow along the way you came up with the idea that you wanted to work on a legacy based on things that I've learned and done. Mm-hmm. I'll remind the people that it's quite a journey. Actually, Kathy, it's almost the American dream journey. You know, poor boy wins lottery, or nobody becomes a somebody, or poor boy makes good, you know, succeeds. And so I was a pastor in a small town, and God did some great, great things. Yeah. Well, actually, we should back up. I did not grow up like this. I went to church briefly in the Nazarene Church, which we talked about the other podcast, and was touched by God. But by the eighth grade, I dropped out of religion totally until I was age 23. Right. Yeah. So I had to start with ground zero when God touched my life. And I said, I've been called to preach. I had zero help. I had no father. I knew no pastors. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to church. I had no theological training. And somehow from there, God in time, which is the legacy you're putting together, it launched me into a national and international ministry.
Correct.
That went to, in 200 nations, we were seen and heard. And we traveled the world and touched more than thousands of churches. And here we are today.
Yes.
So you would like to back up now to a certain point where we traveled for almost 7 years across the United States from church to church to church to church. We traveled in a Greyhound bus. We sang, we ministered, we got love offerings, and we told some of those stories. And now we're up to a certain place. So where are we now
in our legacy story?
Yeah,
well, we're in about 1983, the second half of 1983. And I think we already shared how you were given the Winky Pratney tapes and book on revival and describing it, which so inspired you and began to change you. And then towards the very end of 83, God spoke to you and said, wait a minute. The revival is coming to the local church and not to the big convention centers anymore. And then you said to me, but we don't have a church.
Yeah.
It's coming to the churches, but we don't have a church. Basically, we were rejected by all the pastors in the churches in the nearby town of Sedalia because they were threatened by little old us, young and full of zeal. So there we are, the end of 83, and you can take it from there.
Yeah, I might explain that a little bit. We, at that time, seemed successful towards the end of it, when we started with
right,
nothing.
Yeah.
But by that time, we'd been on the 700 Club. Mm-hmm. I had songs that have been played on the radio. Yeah. So in the town we lived in, we were considered successful. And so they were a little threatened by this successful couple coming into their church and making it the home church. And they got nervous about it because, are we going to take over? Are we going to attract people? Are we going to steal people? Yeah. Are we going to be more popular than them? I know it's crazy, but that's what happened.
We didn't feel that way about ourselves.
No, of course not.
Trust me.
And so I start feeling in my spirit, in my heart and mind, that revival was going to start breaking out in America, in the local churches. Now, that's not going to happen for a number of years, but you got to start somewhere. And so I came to Kathy and I said, Kathy, if revival breaks out in local churches, we're going to miss it. And I've been listening to these revival teachings, you know, so I'm in it now, boy, I'm learning. And we're going to miss it because we don't have a local church to have it land in because we're going from church to church to church. And then when we are home, we visit a church, but it can't be really a home church because then we go on the road again.
Yeah, okay. And they were uncomfortable about us.
Why do you keep bringing that up? It's okay.
Well, I mean, if for somebody we're trying, your legacy needs to impact other people who maybe have gone through the same kind of things.
Yes.
And slowing them down.
Yes, that's true because... ministries and ministers can feel very threatened. Did you know this is a statistic that people in the ministry are the most insecure of all professional people, especially like bankers or doctors or whatever. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So I said, Kathy, you know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have to cancel the year 1983, the rest of 1983, and maybe part of 94, and we're going to go home. We had a home. We're going to park the bus. And we're going to start seeking God for revival. And what does this mean? So that's what we did. Now, at that time, now we have no income. Everything stopped. Yeah. And I don't know what I was thinking as far as a husband and father and husband and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what I was thinking because, well, how are we going to make it? But
Well, I was excited. I was too.
Living
the exciting life of faith right along with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I knew God wanted us to shift gears a little.
And we didn't know what to do at the first, particularly the beginning. We were seeking for something we didn't know where we're going. Mm-hmm. And you reminded me a little bit ago, a dear pastor, I'll just say his name because he should be honored.
Yes.
He's no longer with us, but J.D. Sherman had a church there that he started in Sedalia. Yeah. And when he found out we weren't traveling, he did the opposite of what the other churches did. And he said, please, if you're in town, if you're out of town, you're out of town. Because we still had a few little things. People were still kind of asking us to come and do a few things until we cut it off. Then he said, hey, if you're going to be in town, would you come to my church and just help play the piano and sing, do the offering, preach sometimes, help meet people, just anything we could do.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll pay you what you were making. And we were only making, it sounds crazy though, I said we were kind of successful, but we put money back into the ministry and we took a salary of $200 a week.
Yeah.
And we took $200 a piece though. So it was $400 a week at that point. He came and said, I'll give you $200 a week if just Sunday morning. I think we went Wednesday night too.
Yeah, we did.
If you'll come to my church now that you're here and just help me.
Yeah.
Sing, preach, do whatever. And we said, okay. So he paid us and we just went to church, drove to his church and attended church. And he got us through those days of seeking when we had no income. It wasn't a lot, but we got by.
God really used him at that awkward time in our lives.
So while that's happening, we had a church. There was a church in Chicago, a nice church, a very well-established church in a very well-established neighborhood. They were, shopping malls were going up, houses were being built. It was a beautiful part of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And they offered us a staff position. It's kind of second in command. They had a school, you could teach and I could preach, and they offered you a salary, me a salary, a car,
health insurance, everything.
Yeah. Not a car, but you know, they'd pay. I can't say it. They would lease a car for us. That's what I meant to say. And health insurance and that you get car allowance and all that stuff. That's what it was. And it was a good package, much, much larger than we had. And like we would be in a big church, probably considered successful. So guess what we did? We said yes. And in the small town that we lived in 532 people, where we only moved there because our house got hit by a tornado and there wasn't any place to live. And we bought a house in the town outside where there was housing. So we lived in this little town. That's the only reason. And they offered us a job and we took it. And so we started, we went up there, we picked out a house. I can still see the house. Yeah. I don't know if you can, but I can still see it. It had central air conditioning, which our house didn't. We had air conditioning, but it wasn't. It was an old window. And I thought, look at that. We're going to have and it was a new neighborhood and everything. So we said yes. Yeah. And they loved us. We'd been there a number of times. So they knew us. It wasn't that they didn't know us. Mm-hmm. And they had like, I think if I remember right, like 21 applicants or something that wanted that job. And we didn't even apply and got it. Because they knew us and liked us. So there you go. That's the story. Except all of a sudden, in this town of 532 people, I found out I didn't even know. I never walked around. I never knew. I didn't know anybody in the town. And they came to me and said, do you know there's a church over here on the far side of town? Which was like, what, 8 blocks?
A minute and a half drive
in this little town.
Yeah.
There's a church built in 1859. And it was there during the Civil War, World War I, the Depression, two Korean and up to then. And they said, it's going to be torn down. It's labeled a historical site. It's a, you know, a state historical site. It's going to be torn down. We can't keep it. It's been locked up for 4 years. It has no people, no money. It needs to be painted. It's kind of sagging. It smells bad. There's dead rats and birds inside. Would you like to be our pastor? And I said, our pastor? What do you mean? He says, well, we have 6 members, but don't worry, none of them will come.
Yeah.
And so they wanted me to be, it was church, Christian church is what they called it, just Christian church. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I'm going to Chicago, obviously. So time passed, not very much time passed. They came to me again and said, we are desperate, you know, it's going to be torn down. Would you reconsider? And I said, no, I won't reconsider. We're going to Chicago. By this time, we're starting to kind of pack and get things moving and get ready to go. And it was an exciting chance for us.
Yeah.
And so they came to me a third time. This time it was different, though. They were different because they said, listen, it's going to be torn down. We don't want to lose it. What if we just gave it to you? Or actually, they sold it to us for $1, but basically gave it to us.
Yeah.
And we had a non-for-profit, so they actually sold it to the non-for-profit.
Right.
Ministry for $1.
Yeah.
Okay. I said, we'll let you have it. It's got a little tiny kitchen and it's got a piano. I hadn't even seen it. And so, you know, they wanted us to go see it. And but I hadn't even seen it. I didn't even know it existed. And they said, so you can have the whole thing on the corner lot. It's old, but you can have it. It's been closed for 4 years. I said, nope. No, thank you. We're going to Chicago. And they looked so pitiful because they said, you're our last. They said, we've asked everybody. Basically, they said, we've asked everybody we like. But they knew, you know, I'm a hand raiser. I speak in tongues, you know, and I'm charismatic. And they didn't want that, but they wanted to save the building. So they bit their tongue, I think, held their breath, and said, would you just please? And so going out the door, I said that ultimate statement that changed our lives. I said, all right, all right, all right, I'll pray about it. Did I mean it? Not at the time. You just say that. It was like me saying, let's do lunch. And I don't mean, and we're never going to do lunch, okay? So that's what, I'll pray about it.
Right.
We only lived another less than a minute away. I could drive. Mm-hmm. But during that minute, I'd been listening to Kenneth Copeland's teachings on integrity, of keeping your word like God keeps his word. So I'm getting there, I pull in the driveway, and I thought, okay, pray. So I come in the house and I don't even tell you that I'm going to pray about it. You're busy, you know. I come in though and I get in the living room. I get down, you know, kind of praying and stuff. And I lay it out before the Lord. Here you have, Lord. Here's a church in Chicago. It already had 800 members. It already had. And they wanted to go over. They said, if you come, we'll go way over 1,000. That's what their hope was. And so it was a good deal. Housing, car, salary. We've already mentioned all those great benefits. And then now God, and here's a church in this town of 532 people. It's been closed for 4 years. It has no people, no money. We have no money either left over now. We've spent all our savings seeking God to what we should do.
Right.
And, you know what? I should back up, though. There is one thing you did while I was seeking God. You said to me, Steve, maybe you should consider being a pastor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, that was right after we started stopped traveling. And I remember my response was, oh, no, not that. I don't want to be a pastor. Well, anyway, that got in me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go join this church. And now here's a church, no people, no money, locked up, smelly, dead birds, dead animals, just a dead, dead thing. But I said I'd pray about it. I laid out, here's the big church. Here's the church with nothing going on in this little town that has nothing. Didn't have a gas station. No. It did.
Well, it was there. It was.
But it closed.
Yeah.
It had no grocery store, and then the gas station closed. It was there for a little
bit.
It
had a little tiny post office.
Yeah. And and a bank. Yeah. That was it.
It had a little tiny beauty salon.
Oh, that's true.
Because I went there.
Yeah. That was it. And I said, God, I said, Jesus, look, this is completely ridiculous question, but what would you do?
Yeah.
And I heard from heaven an astounding sound. And he said, I'll tell you what I would do. I would raise the dead. And the life just left me. I think I turned completely pale because I thought, that is what you would do. In my heart, I was like, said that I would do what, you know, I want to follow you and do your will. I'm here, oh God, whatever you say, yay. Now all of a sudden, he's offering me to raise the, together, we would raise something dead that has no salary, no people, no nothing, and we're out of money. And I didn't know what to say other than, okay, we'll do it.
Yeah.
And then he backed up, I need to get in order, he backed up a little on me. And gave me a second offer. And he then began to speak to me that same day and say, listen, I'm going to give you a choice. I don't want to tell you to do this. I want to give you a choice. And he said, here's your choice. And I will love you no matter what you choose. You can either be in the kitchen with Martha, or you can be at the feet of Jesus with Mary, with me, with Mary. I knew what that meant. I said, okay, so I could still go to Chicago if I wanted to. But that would be going into the kitchen. Standard, staff member, everything's paid. Just do the dishes, serve everybody, keep every, you know. Or you can sit at the feet of Jesus and you're not doing any work. You don't know. All you're doing is discipling your life and learning. So I chose that too. I said, I'll take it. And I knew that was the right answer.
Yes.
I just didn't know what it meant. So I said, I'll take it. I'll go to the feet of Jesus. Now we're going to open this church on a Thursday night. You know why I did it on a Thursday night?
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to make it as hard for God as I could. I said, if anybody comes to church on a Thursday night in this town, it'll be a miracle. Well, actually, about one family and some relatives showed up.
Well, I think I kept count. I even had that calendar.
Yeah.
Of the people who attended, the title of the sermon, and the amount of the offering.
Really?
For those first couple of years. I've got the calendar still. And that first Thursday, 13 people attended, and 6 of them were children, and the offering was something like $28.
Yep. I thought it was, on the next week it must have been 40, because I was thinking 40, but you kept track of it, so
I
know.
I wrote it down. I've still got the proof.
So we did that for a couple of weeks, and then people, this little group of maybe 15 people or whatever, mm-hmm. starts saying, or maybe 20, why don't we start having Sunday church? Why are we having this Thursday? Because that's all we had was Thursday night, to make it really hard. So we made the switch over, mm-hmm. and I began the journey, and I preached revival. I told them, revival's coming to America,
yes.
to the local churches, which it did, but we're not there yet. Yeah. And I began to stand on that little platform of this little church where not very many people to start with. And I began to say, imagine people lined up to get in this building because the spirit of revival of God, the glory of God, not because of the music or me or my personality or yours, but because God's in the house for real. And I talked it. Now, being at that church after we'd been on the 700 Club and had things on the radio, people kind of shunned me. Now, not just the local churches who thought, what has happened to him? Because now my church is smaller than their church. Before I was the superstar, we were the superstars.
Well, we were the successful.
Yeah, we were the successful.
I used to say we were climbing up this gospel ladder of
we were.
Success.
And we were.
Yeah,
we were. Now they're more successful than I am. And now they don't want to have anything to do with me because they wonder, what did you do wrong that God sent you to this place?
Right.
You must be stupid. You turned down what? To be here? And there's nothing here. And so, but there was something there.
Yes.
There was the feet of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have any friends, didn't have any support. Nobody gave us any money.
Right.
Nobody helped get us started.
No.
And we did several things, though. I thought, okay, why do I start? I'm really starting a church. Old building, but no church. You know, everybody, there was nothing. Why am I starting this church? And we called it Smithton Community Church, a community one. Mm-hmm. Why would I start this church? And I felt like God saying, well, I don't need another church unless you do something different than other churches. Then there's a reason to go for it. So you and I made a decision.
Yes.
We, first of all, would like to have a church that God attends. I know everybody thinks that God attends every church, but read the Bible. And he's not that happy sometimes with his own people and what they do. So, no. But the devil attends every church because there's always some mean people there somewhere, you know. But I said, let's get a church that God attends. How are we going to do that? So we talked it over. We said, well, let's first of all, let's look at heaven. Let's look where God is. What's it like there? It's worshiping.
Yeah.
It's holy. And everybody worships in heaven. Okay. So our goal would be to get a church where people come and everybody worships.
Yes.
Everybody sings, even the kids. Everybody's just engaged, not mumble singing, but
right.
We're worshipers. We're singers. And I wanted a church like that. We traveled and knew all the churches, and the ones that really were good churches were the people who were really involved, engaged.
Yes.
So I want a church of people. I don't want people looking at their watches. I don't want people saying, how soon does this get over the second they walk in? Okay. So then you suggested, well, what about this? What if we could have a church where everybody was saved and born again? Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to have new people come and get born again, but we don't have people that not born again that just sort of hang out at church.
Yeah.
And you don't have the mixed people. Everybody's born again. Everybody's singing. Everybody's praising. And we also thought, what about everybody's a giver?
Yeah.
People give. I mean, generous. Everybody's generous. Let's just say
yeah.
that. And all of a sudden we're realizing this would be different if it could happen. So we set that our goal. And then lastly, what if everybody was filled with the Holy Spirit just like they were in the Bible? And we began to set that as our goal.
Yes.
And instead of having a church where they had the, you know, the lukewarm over here and they have a few that kind of, when music starts, have a few kind of dancers that sort of, they're all excited and they sing real loud, but they always sit in the same place and kind of dance around.
Yeah.
Then you got the teenagers who sort of just sit on the back row and yeah. talk and punch each other and flirt. And I thought, no, mm-mm. That is not a church God's going to attend.
Yeah.
We can do better. So we invented a phrase, you helped me invent it, or you might have invented it, that said, what about if we could start a church where we had the power of all?
Yes.
Just like at the when he said, the wall of Jericho will come down if everybody blows their trumpets and everybody shouts and everybody marks, everybody.
Yes.
And we're not going to have one or two or a little group over here says, well, I'll blow my trumpet when God tells me, but until God tells me, I'm going to do it. We didn't blow trumpets in the church I grew up with, so I'm not, yes. We don't march in our church.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they all marched around.
Yes.
And the wall came down. We dreamed that.
Yes.
And then we dreamed where it said they were all in the together in one place,
mm-hmm.
and they were in on the day of Pentecost, Book of Acts, chapter 2, and they were all filled with the Holy Spirit. And again, there wasn't one that said, well, you know, I just don't believe speaking in tongues is for today. I think that ended with Elijah. And did you know there was a movement that, you know, you
really?
Hear today that the power of God ended with the apostles?
Yeah.
There was a movement in Jesus' day that the power of God ended with Elijah.
Mm.
So when the power of God, when he started operating the power of God, they said, must be Elijah, because it only happens with Elijah. Imagine that.
Mm.
So anyway, but none of them said that. This can't, what? Speaking in tongues, this can't be God. Elijah's not here. Oh, wait, when Elijah comes in, maybe I'll speak, you know. Nope. They all. And we began to dream of a church like that. We began to dream of a church where all the children, well, worship was a family thing. Kids didn't color. Kids didn't bring G.I. Joe and Barbie to church. They're never going to get saved anyway. So why do that? And have an airplane going in or a car on the back. We did have that at first. You know, some kid had a car and he's rolling it back and forth on the back of the pew, you know. So wait a minute. They wouldn't do that if they were in the presence of a real king. A
no.
real king.
No.
In fact, in Israel, you'd be killed for doing it. They'd just take you out and kill you for being rebellious and stupid. Or at least they'd beat you with sticks. Okay? That's what we wanted.
Yes.
Now, I preached revival's coming, and I started telling our church, and we grew. We were considered successful tiny town pastors. We're tiny town pastors. But I did get asked to speak at a conference because we had 100% tithers. Every member of the church was a tither. Mm-hmm. And they invited me, come speak because we want to know. And they thought, what's the secret to getting everybody in the church to be a tither? And they wanted to know the tithing secret. Do you have you got a real hot sermon or whatever? You know, so tell me your sermon so I can preach that sermon. I said, no. You're missing the point. We don't have 100% only tithers. We got 100% everybody. I said, I want everybody saved, yeah, worshiping, filled with the Spirit, mm-hmm, giving their money, mm-hmm, loving each other, committed, coming to every service. We had 3 services, yeah, a week. We had Wednesday night and 2 on Sunday from, yeah, where we came. And we grew, yes, over the years, yeah, to about 125, then 150, then 180. And every once in a while, we might hit a 200. Maybe we had a guest or something was going on in town. Yeah. That was huge, yes, for a town 532, mm-hmm, people on a Sunday morning to have 150, 180 people in the church.
Yes.
Because most churches in America are below 200 anyway, and some are below 100. And so that went on. Now, I've been talking revival, and I've been saying it, and all the time I got up and talked about it and said, imagine people lined up to get in this country church. And it was just too over the top to even believe, probably, but people tried to believe. Now, guess what happened, though? I didn't realize that I was going to be like John the Baptist out in the wilderness.
Yes.
12 years, mm-hmm, goes by, 12 years of my life. If it had been a couple of years, you know, we turned down Chicago, and now a couple of years, wow, it breaks out. People are lined up to get in our church. We were going, this is it. This is God. We talked about raising the dead, but after 12 years, it was a good church, but it was not a God church to the level that I had read about,
yeah,
revivals, mm-hmm, and where God just swept in and swept away, and it's just overwhelming power of God. You need to read about real revivals, not some that write today, right? Historical revivals.
Yeah.
And 12 years passed, and I still had no friends. I had local friends, but our church, but that was it. And now 12 years passes, and instead of raising the dead, trouble came. Things got worse before they got better.
Yeah.
The reason, and I'll leave off with this today, mm-hmm, the reason. And by the way, revival does come, and that's going to be on our next podcast, how it happened, that people from all over the world are going to come to that little town.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you how it happened. And I went from nothing to international fame in about 9 months or a year. But before it could happen, trouble came.
Yes.
Do you know why trouble came? Even God uses trouble, mm-hmm, to mold us sometimes. We don't like it. I didn't like it. It was not fun. But now looking back, I spoke revival. I preached revival. I did revival sermons, and the church was really doing well, doing great. But I started doing bad because the small town now after 12 years was eating me up. The gossip, the small town politics, people come, people go. They go to your church. They say they love you. Then they disappear. I'm going like, what? I gave up Chicago church for this, an 800-member church for this in and out little town politics. And some bad things happened, some bad things happened in town. And it just broke me. And I said, is this it? I gave 12 years of my life for this. So the church is doing great. And I start going downhill.
Yeah.
That's about all I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. Because what really was the problem is God wanted to bring revival to that small church. And he did it in other places around the world too. To our church in that tiny town. We're going to be the smallest town in the world that ever had an international outbreak in history. In history, smallest town in history that ever brought the nations to its door. I'll tell about it next week. But the reason is God wanted to bring revival to our church and maybe your church. The problem was I wasn't ready. I preached it. I knew it in my head. But as a person, my character was not ready to become the person that God needed me to be. So I had to be broken. And I had to, like Paul said, I've been crucified with Christ. Something in me had to die and be reborn again. And I had to become, like Paul on the road to Damascus, I had to become a different person. So God was ready for revival like he's ready for revival today. But are we ready to become the people that carries revival to the nation and to the world? That'll be next week of maybe the valley of the shadow of death that I went through until finally revival comes and the nations and people do line up to get into that building for 3.5 years. A quarter of a million people are going to come. I'll tell you more about it next week as Kathy puts together the legacy of Steve Gray. Nope. The legacy of the Holy Spirit and how he moves on ordinary people to do extraordinary things. Till next time. Bye-bye.